The IMG Roadmap is the only podcast dedicated to coaching international medical graduates and success blueprints for this unique pathway. I am Dr. Nina Loom, your host, a previous IMG turned hospital medicine physician, healthcare administrator, speaker, and coach. I empower, encourage, and equip you with actionable steps that you can take towards the residency position of your dreams.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the IMG Roadmap Podcast. Today's guest is Dr. Quilicon, and she is in Texas. She's an IMG, and I invited her on because her story is a little bit different from what you usually hear on the podcast, but doesn't make it any worse or any better than yours. And we really want to just come together and share with you a different perspective as to the possibilities that IMGs have while pursuing this path into U.S. residency. So welcome on the show, Dr. Quilicon. How are you?
Hi, Dr. Loom. I'm good. How are you doing?
I am doing well. So actually, I just realized that I butchered your name. It's Quilicon, not Quilicon. Is that right?
It's Quilicon. It's okay. It's a hard name. It's quite a mouthful. So
Quilicon. Okay. I got it right now.
Yeah.
So thanks so much for coming on. Can you just tell us a little bit more about yourself, like where you went to medical school, what kind of IMG that you are, and what makes you an IMG?
So I went to medical school in China, even though I am not from that country at all. I was originally raised and I finished my high school from Saudi Arabia. And then from there, I went to China for a six-year program. One of the reasons why I chose to go over there was, honestly, I thought it would be quite an adventure, which it did turn out to be one. And also because the rankings of the school, honestly, were pretty good. So I thought that wherever down the line I would like to go and practice, this might be a good institution to start with. After I had finished my school, I moved to United States because my family was over here. And because of that, I'll be an international medical graduate. I came over here as an immigrant, and I thought it would be a good idea that I would pursue residency, just like all of us are trying to do.
Right, right. Thanks for sharing that piece with us. And so just a recap. So you're originally from Saudi Arabia, but then you attended medical school in China. And now you're currently in the state of Texas. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about your journey since medical school? So when did you graduate medical school? What year and what that has been up until this point?
So I graduated medical school in around like 2016. I graduated around July, and by August, first week of August, I was here in the United States. I was thinking of taking a gap year for a bit because I just wanted some time to cool off, just to meet my family, spend some time with them. And originally, I actually was going to pursue doing master's in Sweden. But then I realized that it would be a better idea for me. And also my dad suggested that the residency programs in the United States are pretty good. So why don't you try going down this route, doing your steps, getting your rotations and applying. While I was trying to do that, because I have major test anxiety. I think a lot of people can relate to me regarding that. We all have that. And I thought it would be best that I first start with my rotations, trying to get a bit comfortable with the healthcare system in the United States. So what I did, since I didn't know a lot of people over here, I used the GPS. I basically wrote clinics near me, printed out my CV, about 20 of them. And a span of 15 miles, I just went around and dropping my CV to every clinic that I could possibly find. And one of the clinics actually accepted me. It was a new doctor. She was practicing and she needed someone to help her out to see the patients who had a little bit knowledge in interacting with patients. And I was able to do that. And that's how I was able to get into my first observership in family medicine. While I was working with her, I did tell her that I would like to apply. And she was one of the first people to actually tell me that having a research experience would be the most important thing, and it's really going to help with my CV. And I think as a lot of IMG students, we hear that quite often that, oh, you need to do this so you stand out. Oh, you need to do that so you can make it big, because there's a hierarchy that we are always told about, that first it's the US students, the US medical students, and then it's the IMG students that may be from the Caribbean, and then it's any other medical student from anywhere else. which I honestly think is not always the case.
Can you tell us why?
After that, so working over here, I currently work at University of Texas. And once I was able to get over here, I realized that there's such a diverse group of people working within the university and working within all of the other universities and big institutes where all of us eventually would like to get our residency in. And not only are they diverse in demographics, but they're also very diverse educational backgrounds. And somehow by starting off one place, they were able to go somewhere else. And that's what happened with me. I first went into a private research facility where I was hired as a help, honestly, just someone that, oh, you can help us write these documentation or patient notes. That's what I started as. But then I slowly started getting trained in clinical trials as a research coordinator. Now, usually you can't go to school to be a research coordinator or be a part of clinical trials. There is not a specific coursework that you can take. Yes, you can take some certifications outside of work, but in order to do that, you are supposed to get a bachelor's degree in science or any related healthcare field. So I thought it would be a good experience for me because honestly, coming from China, from coming through all the clinical and surgical part of medicine, this was something completely new for me. So I was like, this would be a good learning experience. Why not? So that's when I got into the world of clinical research. Now, research as itself is a very, very, very expansive world. We have academic research. We have research regarding pharmaceuticals. We have research regarding engineering and IT and all of that. But related to medicine, clinical research is where I believe that a lot of medical doctors, whether they are IMGs or U.S. medical doctors, can fit in really well. Because a lot of the things that are going on in clinical research does apply to their clinical practices.
Right, I agree.
And so once I got into the world of research, I started gaining more and more experience. I also started applying in different places where I would be able to grow more, where I would be able to take on more work, but at the same time be in a space where I would be able to network and meet people that might be able to help guide me into what are my options as an international medical graduate. I think one of the worst feelings that we get is that doing the steps, doing the rotations is a very gruesome and very like time consuming process, but even more so, it's very, very expensive and life doesn't stop. So I think I have met a lot of IMG students who have always had this struggle. I don't have enough funds for this. I don't have enough time for this. And they feel that they're in a certain time crunch in order to rush through their exams and rush through their observerships because they only have a set amount of money, honestly, on the side. This was able to give me an opportunity where I was able to make some money as well as learn and experience and network, which I think is something that international medical graduates are not able to do so because we're not from here, we haven't studied here, and we haven't spent enough time to have that kind of network around here.
Yeah.
But I just started applying to research coordinator jobs. I started off in a private place. I would be asked to go to different locations depending on what site and what work I had to do. That allowed me to interact with other doctors as well and network with them and ask them, how do I get into the world of research and what is beneficial for me and what is not? And there are a lot of doctors out there who are very helpful, who love to mentor you without. It's all a matter of asking. Nobody is going to know if you need mentorship if you don't ask for it, right?
Right, right, absolutely.
So, yeah, so I just try to network to my best of potential, approach whatever doctors I could, and I asked them, and eventually I applied to University of Texas as a research coordinator in pediatric neurology. Now, pediatric neurology as a residency program is something that a lot of IMG students wouldn't even want to think about. Because it's something because based on the statistics, we have been told internal medicine is your best bet. Neurology is your best bet. Pediatrics is your best bet. I think with the whole process of USMLE and the steps and residency, there's so many statistics involved that you base off your decisions off of those statistics more than what you want out of your life. And I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of us IMGs feel very lost and confused and actually kind of stuck in as to, is that it? Like if I choose to be in the United States, I can only be an attending and that's it and nothing more. And I think that has been causing a lot of anxiety. And I think it's also making a lot of us feel limited in our capabilities. And honestly, I don't think that makes us a good doctor, an overall doctor, as much as we would like to be.
Right. I mean, you've said several things that really resonate with me and some that I have more questions mm-hmm. about. So I'm just going to ask you these questions. So when you moved to the States, were you planning on doing research or were you planning initially on, you know, applying directly into residency? What was the initial intention?
I was going to apply to residency.
Okay. And did you ever attempt to apply in the past? Have you gone through that process?
Yes. So when I was applying for residency and I started looking for programs and as to the entire process of what it requires me into getting the ECFMGU certification and all the exams I have to do and where I have to go, I think there's a lot of information that I honestly had no idea about because that was never part of my plan in doing residency in the United States. So everything I knew was based off of being on more on the European side, not here. Okay. So I don't know about others, but at least for me, I was starting new. And I think one of the things that I would like to say is like, it's not you can ask people for advice, but be wary of who you ask because everyone gives a different perspective. It's good to share stories, but not everyone's stories is your path. You can create your own path. And I think a lot of the times where I was not able to go down that route was because I was so focused on everything I didn't have instead of working with what I did. So that's why I went down the research path because I didn't have any research experience. And they said that if you didn't have research experience, then it basically means that you won't match into any residency programs.
Yeah. So in light of that, I agree that everybody has a separate path. And the truth of the matter is there's going to be some doctors or some physicians, and I know physicians who trained in other countries and moved to the States initially with the plan of pursuing residency training, but then later on found their passion in something else. You know, I know a physician that works for the CDC now who trained in Poland, for example, initially moved here, wanted to get into residency, met an obstacle or two, decided to reroute, did a master's in public health, and now works for the CDC. Uses both his MD background and his public health background, but it's just not in a direct patient care environment. So definitely there is a place for IMGs outside of the traditional roles of clinical medicine. And so,
absolutely.
Right. And then there's some IMGs who use research as a bridge into clinical medicine. So maybe during the years while they're trying to work on their USMLE or while they're trying to network into residency programs, then they pick up a research position for a year or two. And that usually also helps, especially for IMGs looking for competitive residency programs to apply into. So coming back to your story, how did you find the research coordinator jobs? Because there's going to be someone on the listening to the podcast who's thinking, well, I've been wanting to get a research coordinator job. How did you find that? Is there a central website? Did you go to indeed.com? Like, how did you find that job? Or how did you go about searching? Not even just for this one job that you're in at the university in Texas, but just in general, what recommendations or steps do you give?
I think the first step that I will do is make a good CV. Make it very precise. Make it organized as much as possible and try to go on CT training. I can give you the web links for it. What you do is that you can either pay a fee or go online and do GCP training, which has got good clinical practice, and IATA training. These two trainings are like the basic trainings for any research program. So you can actually sit at home and do these trainings online. And if you do that, that just kind of gives a pump up to your CV. And they're like, okay, this person knows a little bit about research. I would definitely suggest they do that. If they're looking for research coordinator jobs, I suggest that I know that ideally we would always love to go for the big institutes, but try to also give a chance to private institutes. Why? Because they work on a much smaller scale. It's a good place for you to start and get trained and kind of get the basis of what constitutes into going into research coordination and what knowing more about clinical trials, knowing about how you need to coordinate everything with the nurses, the doctors, the technicians, how you interact with the patients, everything. I think for me personally, what helped me was that I did start in a private clinical research facility and then worked my way into an institution and a university-based facility.
Right. So even with starting with the private clinical opportunity that you got, for the sake of the audience, what we're really wanting to hear from you is what are those specific steps that you did? Did you go knocking on doors? Did you Google programs? Did you research and call people? How do they, if someone's sitting in their house right now and they're listening to you and they're like, whoa, I never thought of that. I never thought I could also create a career in research in medicine as an IMG, and they want to pursue it. What are those basic nitty-gritty steps that you would tell them to start doing right now?
So one thing that I would suggest everyone is knocking on doors. You would be surprised how many opportunities you might have over there. If you go to clinicaltrials.gov, that actually tells you all the active clinical trials at the moment all over the world. And you can narrow it down to your city or areas near you. So when you try to contact any of the doctors through emails, going to their offices or anything, you can actually tell them, I know that you're running this trial. I'm very interested. And if you need any help, please let me know. I think like if you put yourself out there and you actually take the initiative of walking to a space and being like, I need help with this. Can you please help me with it? You might go to five places. You might get something from one place that might lead you to another. Sometimes if you do observerships with certain doctors that also do clinical trials on the side, they either move you to the clinical side of the portion. So they give you internships. So that counts as an experience as a research coordinator. Or what they do is that they sometimes hire you as well. So that will be something. For me, it was a bit of a trial and error in my situation. And all the other research coordinators that I've talked to that have an IMG or a medical background, I think this was the best thing that happened with them, basically knocking on doors and going to private research facilities instead of immediately going to institutes. Work your way through. Work in a private institute for about 6 to 10 months. That gives you enough experience to kind of understand what goes on into a clinical trial. And then keep on applying and making sure that you gravitate towards bigger facilities. And then they'll be more likely to hire you. The universities and colleges or anywhere else, big research institutes are less likely to hire someone who doesn't have any research experience, specifically if it's less than 6 months.
Right, right.
I hope that
helps. So that helps because really what you're telling us to do as IMGs is, hey, if you're listening right now and you're interested in research, it's not going to fall on your lap. You need to get out there and start by looking up the closest facilities to your area, knocking on doors and asking for opportunity, because sometimes these opportunities are not listed on a central website or on the front of the building. But if you call and you ask, you may get a foot in. And once you're in, then you learn about the other opportunities that open up, which are usually the better paid opportunities. But typically because they're not very readily accessible to the public, you sort of have to be involved in the system already to learn about some of them. Is that a good summary?
Yes, it is. One more thing I just thought of that might help as well is that if you're not able to find a job, like you go on Indeed or Monster.com or whatever website that you prefer using for careers, if you have a specific university that you would love to work at, like let's say University of Colorado, you can go to the career section and type in research coordinator and go for coordinator one, because that is the most junior position. And that's where they have the least amount of eligibility criteria, for lack of better words, like that they might have that it will give you a good startup. If you're not able to find a job in research coordination and you think that your CV is not going to fit with whatever requirements they might have, look for jobs under the name of research assistant. Even though this job doesn't pay as well as a research coordinator, it's a very good stepping stool for you to network, but also get into research coordination and eventually wherever you would like to go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with that. So
tell us a little bit about sort of the day-to-day of your current research job. What does that look like? Is it a paid opportunity? Is it a volunteer opportunity? Is it something you see yourself doing long-term? What do you specifically do for this program, at least for whatever that is HIPAA compliant that you can share with us?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So for research, anyone, let's work with a timeline. For example, if I don't have any experience at all, it's okay for me to take up a job for about 2 to 6 months that is unpaid, only because it's really hard to find places that are willing to accept you when you have less than 6 months of experience, quite honestly. So experience itself is worth it. So if you have an experience less than 6 months, if there's an unpaid job, take it. As soon as you hit the 6 month part, ask for a raise or try to look for a job where they can pay you well. Secondly, what I moved towards is that, example, I got hired as a research coordinator. I would have to interact with my patients. So it means scheduling the patients, enrolling the patients, making sure that they are right for the study, but also that the study is a good fit for them. Everything coordinating with the PI. PI is the principal investigator, which is mainly going to be the attending, the fellow, or the doctor, whoever is overlooking the study itself. Everything medical related or clinical related is going to go through the doctor. And at the end of the day, they're the ones who are evaluating all clinical aspects of the patient itself. Right. You would also be in a situation where you would have to draw labs. Usually for bigger institutes, they have LVNs and nurses that are able to help you, but you would also get specific training where you would be running the labs, like basically working with the samples, making sure they're prepared, they're shipped out, all of that will be there. When the patient comes in for a visit, the visit is not like a clinical visit. Based on whatever protocol that you might be following for the study, you have to follow a certain criteria of what needs to get done. Like, let's say there's a study going on and the patient needs to get their EKGs done. You need the vital signs, the height. You need to run some scales that the study has provided you with. That itself, all the procedure that you do is basically data collection. Doing those procedure means all the information you're taking from there is what you're going to give back to the sponsors or whoever is responsible for the study. After moving along with that, I'm working on that stage, that startup. So even before like a study starts up and you're enrolling patients and you're seeing them and making sure they're okay, there's the admin part, which I think would be interesting for our IMGs who really like the contracts and the business part that they would like to learn about. And I think this will be a very interesting place for them because they work with contract negotiation, they work with budget and finance, and they work with work time and what really goes into making the research itself a good fit for the institute, what makes it lucrative, also kind of gauging whether, hey, is this trial going to be profitable for us or not? Because you're using this resources of the facility. And at the end of the day, it is a business. So you get to see that the business aspect of it too.
Now, I was going to say that's a very interesting perspective, which I'm really pleased that you're speaking on. But
yeah, so I think that would be, depending on whatever research that anyone decides to go, whether it's cardiology, neurology, it could be neuropsych, whatever field that you're interested in, the studies would vary a little bit, but the beauty of research is that once you get those 6 months of knowing the basic plan, everything else just builds up on it. So I think a lot of us also might have a personality type. We're just like, hey, I just want to go and work, follow the rules, and get out. So I think this is a really good place for people who are just like a bit of the uniformity of their work, that they go in, they have a list of things that they have to do. And once those tasks are done, they clock out at 4 or 5 and they're done for the day. I think that would be interesting for them as well.
Right. So coming back to your plans, do you have intention of continuing to pursue residency? Because it sounds like you'd love doing research. It sounds like it's a very rewarding experience for you that you actually are encouraging IMGs to look into research as well. But from your perspective, are you looking to stay in research? Are you still seeking to apply into residency? What is the future looking like for you?
So for me at the moment, I actually would like to go into residency because I just feel like I have to do it. I have to be in clinical medicine. That's just something I personally believe that I really need to do for myself. And then eventually I would come back to research because the growth in research is like you go from research coordinator 1, 2, 3. You can either go to the academia part. You can go into administration like your friend who did for public health. Or what you can do is go back into your residency after you have your amazing CV. And then once you have become a fellow, start taking part in clinical trials, which actually is good because whatever demographic you're working with, whatever patients you're working with, and as a doctor, eventually you're going to reach a point you're like, this medication worked really well, but it's not approved by FDA. But if I can design a study that proves that it worked on 10 of these patients, then it's something that can help in making a good addition to the future of medicine, basically. You might be noticing some kind of diagnostic criteria that you find, like in a group of patients, you're finding the same kind of symptoms over and over again, but there's nothing that has been published. There's nothing, a study that proves that this is a part of a syndrome or a diagnostic criteria or whatever it is. But I think for me, because I love research so much, I think I would be able to do more if I go into residency and coming back to it. But if someone chooses not to do that, it's just as good. It just depends on what you want.
Right. And I'm sort of an advocate for delayed gratification in a sense that it's almost better to work on your application in whatever way that you feel is best for you. And if that's pursuing research on the front end and getting more equipped before coming back to the drawing board, that's, you know, honestly, that works because research is a clinically relevant activity. It's not like you've been out of clinical medicine, you know, sitting at home. You're actually spending your time adding to the science and research process of pediatric neurology. So, you know, delayed gratification too is one way to get there. And I think it's really a good point that you bring up because IMGs need to learn to not be in such a rush to get whatever they can get when they can get what they want. In a sense that instead of just going for what you feel like you have a chance of matching into, why not challenge yourself to actually do the work so you can get what you actually really want, even though it may take a longer time. And I think that that's really, that's the message that I would want everybody listening to get today is sometimes it's not about when you get there, it's about if you get there. And being so fixated on just getting anything in order to match may not always in the long term be the most rewarding thing for you. And so I think that's a good food for thought for anybody listening. So we're going to have some people that are going to want to connect with you, Dr. Kilcon, and can you tell us how to connect with you? Can they reach out to you to ask more about research?
No, I'm disappearing after this. No, I'm just joking. So anyone, if you guys have any questions or concerns, please reach me out on Instagram. I have a public account. It goes by .wj. Wow. doc.wj. Feel free to contact me over there, message me, and I'm very open to talking and answering any of the questions that you guys might have.
Absolutely. So yes, we'll have your Instagram handle linked in the show notes as well, so that anyone that wants to connect with you can connect with you. And if you guys follow me on Instagram, I follow her. So go ahead. I just started following her right now, actually. So go ahead and you can find her through my profile as well. But guys, thank you so much for listening and for joining in to this conversation. We want to know what your thoughts are regarding research. So please start the conversation. Join us in the comment section and let us know what you think. Thank you guys. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
I really appreciate you.
Thank you for having me. I'm really glad that I could share something. And I really, really hope that whatever I have said could really help someone out.
I believe it would, because this is a big topic amongst IMGs, how to get research and what to do with it and why it's even important. So I feel like we've been able to touch on that topic today. We really appreciate you sharing your insight. A lot of times it's really difficult for people to come and talk about something that they're still in the process of going through. So I really appreciate you taking the time out to come share with us sort of like the day-to-day of your current life.
Absolutely. Thank you.